Hi, I'm Kyoko. I'm from Japan. Listening to the world is one of my morning routines. The world helps broaden my horizons. I really love listening to the world. Thank you.
If you are like Kyoko and the world is part of your daily routine, we hope you'll join her in donating today. Listener support is crucial for our show. It allows us to bring you the best in international reporting with our mix of rigor and empathy. You can visit theworld.org/give to donate. That's theworld.org/give. Every bit helps and will get us closer to our goal of raising $25,000 by June 14th. Thank you so much. Hey there, I've got a quick favor to ask you. We are doing a listener survey to learn more about how you listen, what you like about our show, and maybe what we could improve on. It takes about 2 minutes to fill out, and we would be grateful if you did. You can find that survey at survey.prx.org/world. Again, that's survey.prx.org/world. Thank you. Hey, I'm Carolyn Beeler from The World. This week, we're launching a brand new limited series podcast, one that dives deep into Iran's campaign to kidnap and kill its own citizens abroad. The story has espionage, organized crime, kidnapping, and a mysterious death that some people think could have been an assassination. It is also about the mind games the Iranian regime plays with its critics, the sprawling reach of state power, and the Iranians in exile trying to stay beyond its grasp. We're calling it Lethal Dissent. It's a story we've been reporting out for a year and a half with support from the Pulitzer Center, Radio Zamana, and in partnership with The Verge and PRX. The story will unfold over 9 episodes, dropping every Friday. Keep an eye out for the red and yellow artwork and subscribe so that it shows up in your podcast feed. We collaborated with the On Spec podcast to make the series. They're based in Istanbul. The lead reporter for this big investigation is Fariba Nawa. She'll tell the story. Here's Fariba.
When the sun sets in Istanbul, it drops behind the giant dome of the ancient Hagia Sophia. The light in the sky fades, and the Bosphorus Strait, which flows through the middle of the city, turns from blue to black. Cargo ships glide slowly through the dusk. Sometimes fog creeps in and settles over the streets as night chills the city. And once my kids are asleep, I walk to the desk in my living room and get settled in. This is when I work. When I work on the same project I've been working on for more than a year, almost two. I spread documents across my desk. Transcripts from interviews, pictures of Turkish gangsters and spies.
Let's see.
I read and reread conversations between secret operatives, trying to wrap my head around a sprawling mission.
Okay, this guy's saying money was supposed to come to my account from Iran. Then this guy asks, which account?
When it's quitting time around 1 a.m., my head spins from it all. That's what happens when you report a story about espionage. It's murky, confusing. People lie. I take everything I've spread all over my desk and gather it up to look at tomorrow. Most of it is evidence. Evidence used in a big trial. According to Turkish authorities, the trial evidence tells a clear story. A story of Iran's campaign to kidnap its own citizens abroad. Citizens who were dissidents. People who, for one reason or another, say they could no longer live under oppression. Some were even vocal in their resistance. Which, when it comes to Iran, can be a death warrant. I got used to the bus ride to Çalıyan Courthouse. It dumps you right outside it.
For the trial that we are following, it is in the heavy penalties court because it's an espionage trial. It's been a long haul, more than a year, almost a year and a half. Some of them, about 4 or 5, are still in prison, so they come in handcuffed. I'm about to go in and I have to turn off my recorder here.
Vatican.
The defendants in this trial are suspected spies, businessmen, former cops, and a Turkish government official, all gathered together in one courtroom in Istanbul. What I saw in that courtroom, the witness testimonies, the judge's rulings, all of it kept me surprised. Day after day, as the prosecutors unveiled how Iran ran an international kidnapping operation. That is, if you believe the Turkish authorities. Every defendant, without exception, denied they committed a crime. What I know for sure is that Iran's operation succeeded, not only by grabbing exiles abroad, but by getting inside their heads. I'm Fariba Nawa. I'm a reporter living in Istanbul, Turkey. This is Lethal Dissent. Episode 1, Prologue. I need to tell you how I got here, and how Iran got here, to this point, where it started hunting its own people in exile. I grew up in Afghanistan, right next door to Iran. We share the same language, Farsi, and a 572-mile border. When I was little, I used to snuggle up next to my dad while he listened to the radio. That's how I found out about the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979. The news was everywhere.
This is the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite.
Good evening. A tearful Shah of Iran left his country today on a vacation from which he may never return.
Iran's government was a secular, repressive monarchy led by a king, the Shah. Most Iranians were glad to see him exiled.
Some people cut the Shah's portrait out of Iranian currency notes.
At this point, Iran's new leader was pretty much a foregone conclusion. He was a dissident living in France.
For the last 7 weeks, this small village has become the center of resistance to the Shah of Iran. He is the 78-year-old Muslim religious leader Ruhollah Khomeini. His title is Ayatollah. To protect him from possible assassination, the French police are providing heavy round-the-clock security.
After the Shah fled, the dissident Ayatollah Khomeini returned to Iran. Over time, there were some changes that were positive. Some people in the lower class became middle class. More people had access to clean water and electricity. Literacy rates increased. Khomeini took the wealth that the Shah had been hoarding and tried to redistribute it. But it all came at a cost.
And despite Khomeini's undoubted charisma, the way Iran is ruled is increasingly criticized as reactionary, autocratic, and arbitrary.
Khomeini's government became a theocracy based on radical interpretations of Shia Islam and became even more repressive than the Shah's government. Within weeks of taking power, they began executing officials who used to work for the Shah's government. Over the next 10 years, thousands of citizens were arrested for their political affiliations or because they weren't adequately religious. Many of them were tortured, executed, or both. Women were sent back into their homes and forced to wear a headscarf in public. Since 1979, that's how it's been. Until once again, Iranians got tired of the oppression. What does that oppression look like today? Well, if you get caught dancing in public, that's 70 lashes or 2 years imprisonment. Dancing in private with the opposite sex, maybe 100 lashes and jail time. Convert to another religion, punishable by death. Unless it's Islam. Even then, it needs to be the officially recognized version of Islam. Being gay is punishable by death. Reading a Western newspaper on the internet? Good luck, they're blocked. Women must wear a headscarf that covers every strand of hair, or they could face fines, have their cars confiscated, or be forced to wash dead bodies. Rich people get away with a lot of these things because they can bribe the authorities, but not everyone can. Which is why embezzled money, billions of dollars, stolen by the political class over the last decade, is all the more infuriating for Iranians. So like I said, Iranians got tired of it all. They protested against the government and the bad economy, choked by Western sanctions. And there have even been citizen uprisings, like in November 2019. It's remembered as Bloody November. Because the government's crackdown was ruthless. Protesters ran into a marsh to hide. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard surrounded it and machine gunned them. At least 1,500 people were thought to be killed. I tell you all this so that you understand how Iran got here. How Iran's relationship with its own citizens became so dire that many Iranians are risking their lives to resist oppression. The state, in turn, is trying to squash that resistance, both at home and by hunting down dissidents abroad. Dissidents like Ruhollah Zam, an Iranian journalist. In 2019, he was living in France. He was editor of a news blog that had about a million followers on the messenger app Telegram. This is him, interviewing a woman arrested by Iran's security services. She says they were arresting her friend for not wearing her hijab properly, and they spotted her filming it. Were they part of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps? They were plainclothes police, she says. That happens in Iran. Government security services will walk around in everyday clothes and make arrests. Ruhollah Zam was not shy about his anti-regime views. He conducted damning interviews like this one, posted news, and covered Bloody November. He even published a manual for making a Molotov cocktail. That got his Telegram account suspended. But he thought he was okay. He was in France. Then he went silent for a while. And when he resurfaced, he was on TV, sitting in a chair with the red, white, and green flag of the Islamic Republic of Iran beside him. I apologize to the regime for everything that's occurred, he says. Zam had returned to Iran. A few weeks later, he was back on Iranian state TV a second time. It's a show called With No Formality. There's an interviewer, and then there's Zam sitting across from him. Zam's face is pale, and he has dark circles under his eyes. The host starts grilling Zam. He asks him, what was the aim for Ahmad News? That's where Zam posted news for his followers on Telegram. To confront financial corruption, Zam says. The host follows up. Do you think the way you were going about it was logical? How was it illogical to you, Zam asks. You were provoking violence on the street, the host says. At the end, the host asks Zam. What sentence would you give yourself? Zam smirks. From the beginning, they told me they would execute me, so... Then the host turns and looks into the camera. He thanks the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps for letting the show interview Zam outside the prison where he's being held. داشته باشیم ممنون از همه شما که این گفتگو رو دنبال کردید خدا نگهدار. Within days, the government announced that they had executed Ruhollah Zam. They hanged him for corruption on earth, which is a religious way of describing people who the regime considers a threat to the well-being of society. Zam's colleagues told the French press he didn't go back to Iran willingly. Somehow, he had been lured from France to Iraq, and it was in Iraq, right next door to Iran, that the regime grabbed him. And he wasn't the only one.
Turkish investigators claim they uncovered an elaborate abduction plan carried out on their soil by Iranian intelligence. The honey trap was this young woman, according to the Turkish authorities.
In 2020, a woman lured a dissident to Turkey, where he was drugged, then smuggled into Iran. He was later executed. Another was on a layover in Dubai when the regime nabbed him. He was taken back to Iran and sentenced to death.
Jamshid Shahmad is accused of being a leader of a pro-monarchist terrorist group. He denies the claim. Amnesty International have condemned what it calls a sham trial. His daughter.
In each of these cases, only the basic facts were clear. One of Ruhollah Zam's friends told a reporter he was dragged into a dirty psychological game designed by this regime. What's that dirty game? And how exactly is Iran playing it? Iran doesn't view it as a dirty game. To them, kidnapping dissidents in exile and executing them justly addresses a national security threat. That's the reasoning you can gather from the government statements. But there's another topic Iran's statements don't address. Some of the dissidents Iran chases aren't brought back to Iran and executed. They're executed abroad, assassinated. And when it comes to these cases, Iran doesn't comment. They often deny being involved. Not only did I want to know how Iran is doing all this, I wanted to know why they keep doing it. And then there are the dissidents. Why do they keep speaking out despite the potentially mortal risk? This series is about what I discovered. The kidnappings and killings are the last link in a whole chain of events. The first link is a gamble that more and more Iranians are taking to stand up to the regime by speaking out, by refusing to obey. And the regime is reckoning with yet another refusal to obey. In 2022, the regime detained a young woman named Mahsa Amini for not wearing her headscarf properly. She died in custody. These dissidents are ordinary citizens, desperate for change. So that's where I'll start, with two ordinary citizens, friends, who worked as government officials in Shiraz, Iran. One of them lives, one of them dies. Lethal Descent is reported by me, Fareeh Banawa. Reporting in Turkey by Beril Eski. The series is produced by Chris Harlan Dunaway. Our editor is Ibi Caputo. Additional research by Omar Farouk. Fact-checking by Beril Eski and John Klopotowski. Özge Sebzeci is our photographer and multimedia producer. Artwork for the podcast by Hatia Geri. Mixing help from Jenna Gadbois. Musical score and sound design by Ozair Ahmed. Legal review by Eric Brass. This story would not be possible without support from the Pulitzer Center and Radio Zamana. Thank you to our partners, The Verge and PRX. Special thanks to executive producer for The World, Dan Lothian, and managing editor for The World, Tinku Ray. Also, our friend ER, Shahnam Gulsheni, Adnan Devrim, Hamish Brown, Jonah Heller, Levi Bridges, Kate Ellis, Stephen Smith, The JJs, Banu Azizian, Andisha Azizian, Jawad Hassanzadeh, Yitan Yujar, Rashad and Alan at Splice Media. And to the Iranians who helped us, whose full names we can't use for security reasons, thank you. HM, AM, and MB.
Before we say goodbye, I'm popping in to remind you that The World is fundraising now through June 14th. We'd appreciate it if you'd consider making a recurring gift today to keep our nonprofit newsroom running. You can head to theworld.org/give to donate and learn more. That is theworld.org/give. Thanks so much.